Good afternoon, I'm Trinise.
I'm Maiver.
I'm Jorge.
And you are listening to B Radio. For today's discussion, we have breaking news on current events that are happening locally as well as around the world. There will also be a broadcast piece later on in today's segment that will look into the topic of gender representation, featuring an interview with Poppy Lindsay, our welfare officer here at Reading. Now for the bulletin.
Biden makes surprise visit to Kiev ahead of Ukraine war anniversary. Earlier today, United States President Joe Biden has made a surprise visit to Kiev, his first to Ukraine since Russia invaded almost a year ago. It comes as the anniversary of Russia's invasion approaches on 24th February. Biden said the United States would stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes and praise their heroic fighting. He is due to begin a three-day visit to Poland later today. Zelensky praised the visit of the U.S. president as the most important visit in the history of Ukrainian-American relations. He said that Ukraine was fighting for its freedom and freedom for all Europeans and for all the people of the free world. It emphasizes how much we have already achieved and what historical results we can achieve together with the whole world, with Ukraine, with the United States, and with the whole of Europe. Meanwhile, EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels will discuss how to make sure Ukrainian forces have enough ammunition.
Food poverty in the UK. The UK's rate of food poverty is among the worst in Europe. The cost of living crisis is exposing the severity of food poverty in the UK. Millions are being pushed below the breadline as food prices soar, with many struggling to feed themselves and their families. Food prices increased by 16.7% in the 12 months up to January 2023. This is a 45-year high, with the cost of essentials rising at exceptionally high rates. The Trussell Trust saw record numbers of people seeking help between April and September last year, with 320,000 people forced to turn to the charity's food banks. This is a 40% increase in comparison to the previous year. The charity has warned that need in outstripping donations for the first time in its history, forcing the Trussell Trust to launch an emergency appeal to ensure that food banks can meet the alarming level of need in their community.
And in some local news in Reading, Luke Spencer was jailed for dangerous driving and damage to a Mercedes-Benz after a police chase that saw him crash into two members of the public. He pled guilty to one count of dangerous driving, failing to provide a blood specimen for analysis, having no insurance and driving otherwise than in accordance with the license. He was sentenced to a year and 6 months in prison at Reading Crown Court.
Continuing with the Ukraine war topic, Europe fights to maintain solidarity. Russia's invasion of Ukraine changed Europe. Countries have come together, some slower, more reluctantly than others, but still with unprecedented sanctions against Russia. Western allies, initially led red lines, have been repeatedly broken as they've clubbed together to send increasingly powerful weaponry to help Ukraine. As the war now approaches its second year, that unity, however imperfect, still holds. Though flickers of public dissent are appearing for a number of reasons.
Along with this, free school meals, London's mayor launches £130 million scheme for primary pupils. London's mayor Sadiq Khan has announced he is launching a £130 million scheme to give every primary school pupil free school meals for the next academic year. The mayor's office said it is estimated the one-off funding could help more than 270,000 children in the capital during the 2023 to 2024 academic year. A spokesperson added the plans were also expected to save families about £440 per child over the year. Charities and unions have welcomed the news but say more action is needed.
Again, in some local news, a man in his 70s fell to the floor while being robbed outside a Reading Tesco. The victim was targeted outside a supermarket near Oxford Road and Portman Road. The robber, described as a white woman with brown hair, fled with his wallet. The man didn't need hospital treatment following the incident, which took place on February 6th. If you have information, please contact the police. Or if you don't wish to speak to the police, you can contact Crime Stoppers on 800-555-111. Afghanistan Taliban ruler have ordered an indefinite ban on the university education for women. with the Ministry of Higher Education issue a letter to all universities informing them to suspend education until further notice. Mena, who was at the university when the Taliban last seized power in the late 90s, says she could understand her student fears. Professor Manisa Ramsey, an exiled child rights activist, says she has received panicked messages from her female students who have hope that education will remain accessible. The ban on higher education in Afghanistan came less than 3 months after thousands of girls and women sat university entrance exams, with many aspiring to choose engineer and medicine as future careers. Most Afghan teenagers, girls, have already been banned from secondary school education. And Madina, an 18-year-old journalist student, is struggling to comprehend the weight of the order. The move provoked an international chorus of condemnation, with the U.S. warning the Taliban will be held to account. The UN was deeply concerned by the order, as educational is a fundamental human right.
So this highlights an underlying issue within the lack of education for women in Afghanistan due to the effects of the Taliban. Since gaining control, the Taliban have enacted laws that severely restrict the ability of women and girls to exercise their most basic rights to freedom, expression, movement, and education. These laws also have an impact on their other fundamental rights to life, livelihood, access to healthcare, food, and water. As part of their merciless crackdown on Afghan women's rights and freedoms, the Taliban have banned university education for all female students.
The situation is really sad because, as we can see, since the 90s, the education for the women in Afghanistan has decreased. After the Soviet left Afghanistan, many women female rights were banned and they were removed. So nowadays, with the Taliban government, that civil rights, they win, they are losing them again.
Human rights for women specifically in Afghanistan are almost none, from child marriages to the lack of education given, as they are not allowed to attend primary, secondary or university. And the final desperation, it doesn't seem that the future for women will look any better as of currently.
And due to these severe restrictions that have taken place on women's rights and education in Afghanistan, it's practically been made impossible for girls and women to receive an adequate education. And as a last resort, there have actually been cases of private teaching in what has been named as secret schools in different parts of Afghanistan, where secret classes are being run every day and women are risking their lives to do so, as they're putting themselves in danger just to exercise their most basic right.
This is also very dangerous because that's of the norm of the Taliban. Women are not allowed to go outside on their own. They always need to have a man that takes them to the street. And so this is extremely dangerous for their well-being because they will be killed if they are found out to be doing all these things.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the rules of the Taliban are very extreme. And I think it's necessary that the girls and all women to exercise their universal right of education. It's very important for them.
It just shows that this is an ongoing issue in Afghanistan, because this results from them first initially banning girls from going to secondary school, and now it's progressed into them being banned from going to university at all. In September this year, they advised girls they could only choose universities located in their province and prohibited them from pursuing specific subjects. Then on December 20th, they outlawed women from enrolling in universities. A few days later, they outlawed women from working for national and international NGOs. So they're really cracking down on their freedoms and restricting anything that they're really allowed to do.
Obviously, this is a problem because it's not even the female students that want to go educate themselves to school or university. It is also the female teachers that have been teaching their classes who are also cracked down, so they can't even go to school. And that is a problem because they are not able to bring an income. And some people who may be widowed or might not have a man that can support her in these traditional roles will not be able to continue fending for the family. And it creates a vicious circle that just seems to be very difficult to erase, as this has been happening since the 90s.
Well, yeah, I mean, since the 90s, after the Soviet leave Afghanistan, basically civil rights for the women like decrease completely. I mean, that failed government the Soviet tried to make didn't work, and the Taliban take control, and nowadays they fully take control of this government, so we cannot expect more.
And because of the lack of education that we are discussing, and also the financial crisis Afghanistan is in, which is a very strong crisis, many families are now resorting to selling their daughters off to be able to pay for them existing, which is obviously a problem because they don't really know to what family they're sending her off to. And oftentimes, because the culture is that they have to go live with their in-laws, which means that if something bad was happening, like abuse, it's not mentioned to the police because it is seen as a normal thing, but also they can't even speak to their families. And that brings on a huge problem afterwards, that you live with the risk that you're going to have to sell off your daughter, that you never know if she's going to appear dead, and that the police is not going to do anything about it, because in marriages, it's a legal thing that that happens.
In September, the Taliban disbanded the Ministry of Women's Affairs, and in November, women were banned from recreational spaces in the capital. So this just goes to show that women are being stopped from taking part in any social, political, economic, and educational activities as a whole.
This just, again, goes to prove how dangerous it is for women not to have this education, and especially living in such a place where you're financially struggling and you don't even have the resource of education to try and get a better income or try to flee somewhere to have a better income. It's overall a very intense thing that we are not able to finish and try to experience more. Yes. Furthermore, in other breaking news, a London police officer admits to dozens of offences against women, including 24 cases of rape. A serving officer in London's Metropolitan Police has admitted to 49 offences, including 24 counts of rape, over an 18-year period where he was a police officer. And this calls for urgent reform in the United Kingdom's latest police force. David Carrick appeared at South Park Crown Court in the British capital to plead guilty to 4 counts of rape, false imprisonment, and indecent assault relating to a 40-year-old woman in 2003.
I mean, that is horrible, what is happening in the police forces. Like, how is possible the people that is they are in order to protect us, they are attacking the most vulnerable, like kids, women. So it's really bad.
And this is a reoccurring issue as well, because in light of the situation with Sarah Everard, like, that just highlights that this is a prevalent problem in the UK, especially with the Metropolitan Police. And it just begs the question of, if you can't trust the police, like, who are you supposed to trust? They're supposed to be the ones that have your best interests at heart. They're supposed to protect and serve, but they're the ones that are also endangering people. Along with this, several incidents have been brought to light with the UK police, watchdog referred to as a misogynistic and racist culture within the London police force. For the kidnapping, rape and murder of Sarah Everard in 2021, Metropolitan Police officer Wayne Cousins received a life sentence without the possibility of parole. The crime appalled the country and generated discussion about violence against women, and specifically within the Metropolitan Police. There have been several accounts of violence against women exhibited by the Metropolitan Police, the largest service of police in Greater London, who serve the purpose of protecting and ensuring the safety of their citizens. The news of David Carrick comes shortly after an incident in 2022 in which messages were exchanged by the Metropolitan Police joking about rape. These exchanges displayed evidence of violent misogyny, racism and bullying, which was later downplayed as laddish banter. Metropolitan Police officers joked about hitting and raping women, according to a damning report. The sickening messages were shared on a WhatsApp and Facebook group chat by officers mainly based at the Charing Cross Police Station, who worked on now disbanded teams dealing with crime and disorder in Westminster. This came to light after the Independent Office of Police Conduct Conduct launched an investigation in March 2018 into allegations an officer had sex with a drunk person in a police station.
This is a huge problem that is not talked about, but mainly because if the people that are supposed to protect you are the ones who are hurting you, you'd never have the resources to go and state what has happened to you, because, you know, in the end, when it comes down to that, who would you believe, right? Like a police officer that's been condecorated so much time, he's been at the Met Police for 18 years, or this woman? Obviously, it brings the question, right? Like, why had that man been at such a high position for 18 years when he had multiple allegations?
About rape and such things.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have excuse, because a police officer should be like an example for the society, somebody that is there to protect us, that we can trust, that a woman can rely if something happened to them, if she feel in danger, they can rely to that kind of police. But if even they are making some kind of statements, jokes, whatever, like, how can people trust to them? How can do that? I mean,
and it's not even the fact that it was just one police officer apart and all the rest haven't done anything like that. It's multiple police officers from the same police workforce that have been raping women, have been harassing, and have been using their position as a police officer to coerce the woman.
And once again, this stems back to the issue of lack of representation for women in general. I thought, like, if there had been more women within the police force, these issues wouldn't be so prominent. Like, I feel like naturally women are more comfortable around other women, and they find that comfort and seek that protection in other women. They'd be much more comfortable to get help and to take advice from women than men. That's why I feel like some women are sometimes hesitant to contact the police if they're in danger.
I totally agree with that, because I think we end up thinking like, oh, they're going to judge me, as opposed to if it was a woman. Well, first of all, people wouldn't do those types of jokes around a woman, because it's certainly wrong, and you know it's wrong, so you won't do that jokes to the face. And I think having just that bit of representation, I don't think I would have been able to avoid it, but definitely stop it, because it, like, that behavior, it's not like a switch that you switch it at home and you're this abuser. It happens all the time, and the commissioners knew about this behavior and they did nothing, and obviously that is a huge problem.
It's necessary more women are involved in the police force, so there is more gender parity in the police force. It's necessary.
Furthermore, Assistant Commissioner Barbara Gray led and said that on behalf of the Metropolitan Police, they want to apologise to the women who have suffered at the hands of David Carrick, and I commend their outstanding bravery in coming forward and reporting the horrific crimes they were part of. And then she went on further to state that Carrick is a prolific serial sex offender who preyed on women over a period of many years, abusing his position as a police officer. But again, that is the point that we are making, which is this has been happening for many years, and the confidence of the woman just happened now because way more women went to the police, and obviously that is a huge problem that the commissioners and everyone who works for the police need to research into and make sure that they are not hiring police officers that have allegations against them, no matter what type.
I feel like more women should be employed in this field to give them the ability to advocate for the protection of women and put further emphasis on the necessary legislation that is required in order to ensure that the correct and proper conduct is being carried out within the police force to avoid matters like this happening in the future.
I agree. It goes back to the matter of the fact that with women there, representation is made for everyone, and it can be made into a better place.
Yeah, it's definitely important. I mean, also, the police officers should have some psychoanalysis test to know if they are, if they are doing correctly their job and they are suitable for exercising it. And also, implementation of the technology can avoid these kind of things, like body cams and so on, audios that cannot even be turned off. They, like a central command, control them and listen and see everything.
Definitely. So the correct use of them. I totally agree with you.
So the last topic we'd like to discuss in terms of gender representation is that of social media and the influence it can have towards people and like the overall behavior around these gender discussions. So due to the current state of social media, it's likely that you've heard of Andrew Tate. But for those who haven't, Andrew Tate is a social media personality who has gained popularity through his controversial opinions and overall attitude towards women. He first made a name for himself when he appeared on Big Brother UK in 2016, but he was removed due to offensive tweets he made by him going public, and an explicit video of him surfaced of him hitting a woman with a belt. The content that he puts out is often considered to be misogynistic, offensive, and aggressive, and due to this, it resulted in him being banned on several social media platforms. But despite him being deplatformed, he still has a large fan base, and this has shaped their attitudes towards women and impacts the way they behave in real life. For example, how Andrew Tate's message of hate against women is spreading through UK schools, leading teachers to warn others of him fueling misogyny, with boys refusing to learn from female teachers. And as a result of Tate's influence, some students aged around 14 are reportedly refusing to be taught by these women. His misogynistic TikTok videos have over 11.6 billion views, which just goes to show that his message of superiority over women reaches a large audience, many of which are young, impressionable teens who are easily influenced. Tate generally believes that women should be subservient to men and belong in the home, while it's a man's masculine imperative to provide financial support. His views are in line with the idea that women are traditionally the primary caregivers and serve the purpose of childcare along with housework, leaving the men to be the breadwinners.
So, how do you guys feel about that? I think this is a great idea and a great example of how we can lead back to the topic of representation, because these children have had this man talk about his ideas and now they think that's right. And again, I think, well, first of all, it's a horrible thing. I think we all know where he is right now. He's in jail. Because, if I remember correctly, he was arrested for human trafficking.
Yeah, allegations made against him for sex trafficking.
Yeah.
Currently being, I think, detained in Romania.
Yeah.
That's where he's been held, yeah.
Yeah, people in social media are using the hashtag Free Andrew Tate. He did nothing wrong. And are just really devoted into like proving that he's done nothing wrong, that his views are indeed the right thing. And I think we can see how much harm he's done, because I think boys are getting radicalized. It's like they did like a walk out of like school in support for Andrew Tate, just like thousands of men just protesting about him being in jail because he human trafficked with women. Make sense.
I think the problem is not so much Andrew Tate. It's those fake influencers that are around the media, social media, so on. Because as they influence so much the mind of children, that, well, the mind of children is like a sponge. Like all the information you give to him, he will take it like as true and he will replicate the same. So, in the case of Andrew Tate, he's doing some actions that are not correct, saying phrases that are offensive to the women, acting like someone that don't respect women. So, I feel like these kind of influencers should do a job to improve the society, not to destroy it and to make people act worse and worse.
I feel like some of the influences are enabling his behavior, though, because even though he was deplatformed, he's still been invited on several podcasts. As you may or may not know, Elon Musk just bought Twitter and he reinstated Andrew Tate back on Twitter, where he's still like spewing his hatred towards women and is still reaching large audiences. And obviously with him having 11.6 billion views on TikTok, it does reach large audiences. And I think that in order to like crack down on this, he should just be deplatformed altogether. No one should really be inviting him on podcasts, allowing for him to have that platform. I feel like instead women should have these platforms where their voices are heard and where they can speak out against people like Andrew Tate, and where they can advocate for women who have struggled with abuse and have been oppressed at the hands of men.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. Everybody has freedom of speech. So banning Andrew Tate also from Twitter, like, for me, it makes no sense, because everybody has the right for freedom of speech.
Everybody does have the right of freedom of speech, but then it's like when you abuse your power and you're using it to influence these young, impressionable people, I feel like it does more harm than good.
Yeah, then what it should be done is like the younger generation, young people should have some certain restrictions to avoid consume this kind of media. Platforms should like put some age, I don't know, you have
age
to be like 18-year-olds or over to, I don't know, enter TikTok or something like that. So
there are some restrictions for that, but again, if there's always a way around it. And again, I don't think someone who says, and I'm quoting here, I think the woman belong to the man, or females are the ultimate status symbol. People think I'm running around with these, I can't say that word, but because I like sex, there's nothing to do with the reason why I'm running around with this, can't say it, I got these, can't say it, just so everyone knows who the don is. Again, someone who talks that way is horrible, and someone who is portraying he is that way, he is that it is, like, there's no other way to put it. But I love that we are talking about this, because we conducted a box pub around campus, and we got 20 people in total, and we tried to divide it, so 10 men and 10 women. And we asked the same questions to everyone, but we found different results. And so we used a scale from 1 to 10, 1 being the least and 10 being the most. And we first asked them how safe they felt in town. We did not specify at any point in what point of the day. Yet the average of the woman said that they felt a 3 out of 10, which is very low safety rate, as opposed to men who said a 6. However, the woman did mention that they felt harassed, which was our next question. And then we asked them how many times have they experienced harassment in town or uni, and the woman answered with a 9.5 rate, which is almost a 10, which is almost every day, as opposed to men who said who had an average of 1.5. And then we asked them about campus safety during the day, and women said 8.5, as opposed to men who said 10, so they feel very safe. And then we specified the safety around campus at night, especially at Union. And the men answered that they felt very safe, because they answered at 9, because they security, but that they could get into fights. So that's the only thing that worried them, or that they could be robbed, as opposed to women who said 3.5, because they never knew how they were going to make it back home if they do not live in campus, because of the...
In relation to this, it was reported that here at Reading, during a period of time, there was a series of spikings, and due to this, several reports have been made to RUSU. This includes drink spiking and reports that students have received puncture wounds. It has also been exposed that those spikings are linked to venues both on campus and off campus. And as a result, the Thames Valley Police were contacted and informed and aimed to find all those responsible. So it just shows that this can happen off campus, on campus, but it's still a prevalent problem here at Reading as well, even on nights.
Yeah, the safety of women is never guaranteed, and you've got to take extreme measures to it, which RUSU and Union specifically have done, because now they have tabs for their BK bottles, so people are not able to put pills or something in, which I think is a good idea, but I condemn the fact that we're using that.
It's the fact that women have to take those precautions just so that they're able to go out on a night out. Instead of focusing on having a good time, they have to be worried about whether they're going to be spiked or whether they're going to make it safe on time.
Yeah.
Safe home.
I totally agree, and it is a very sad fact. So We will be ending this air part now. Next part, we have a podcast with, again, Poppy Lindsay, and a further discussion on the topic of gender representation. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for listening.
Good afternoon. I'm Trinise.
I'm Maider.
I'm Jorge.
And you are listening to B Radio. For today's broadcast, we will be discussing issues surrounding gender representation. In terms of gender, we decided to look at women in particular, as they are a minority group in society and we feel that they are scrutinized and oppressed more than men. This does not mean that men do not face hardships in life and are underrepresented in certain fields like caregiving and face battles with mental health. We acknowledge this, but decided to focus more on women since we feel that the prominent issues within gender representation concern women, and this is where the most change is required. In order to explore this further, we decided to look at current events surrounding the lack of representation for women, in particular in education, which relates to the lack of representation for them in politics, as this is a prevalent problem. We then thought it was important to discuss the lack of bodily autonomy for women in wider society, because this also links back to the lack of an adequate education for women across the world. By this, I mean if they don't have the essential knowledge on the rights they are entitled to, they are restricted and limited to how they choose to use their bodies. An interview was also conducted with the welfare officer here at Reading to provide further insight into the ways in which women are massively underrepresented in different fields. So in essence, education is a starting point in life for girls and boys, and the quality of education you receive will either allow you to excel in life and exceed all expectations, or it can limit you in what you're able to achieve as an individual living in society, which may place a cap on your success. This is why it's especially important for girls and women to receive an adequate education, as they do not have equal access to education and are typically underrepresented within this field. This is apparent as the quality of education girls and women receive is less economically developed countries isn't proportionate to the education boys and men receive. For example, South Sudan is listed as the number one country in which it is toughest for a girl to gain education. 73% of girls in South Sudan do not go to primary school, and their government only spends 2.6% of its total budget on education. Another country that's notable to mention is Afghanistan, as there have been several human rights violations against women in Afghanistan, and as a result of the Taliban, who have taken control over the country, it has had the highest level of gender disparity in primary education, with only 71 girls in primary school for every 100 boys. The restrictions placed on education for girls and women in Afghanistan have progressively gotten worse since the Taliban have taken control over the country, and this highlights an apparent inequality between boys and girls in different educational systems around the world. For this reason, education is essential for girls, as it boosts economies and lowers inequality. It helps create more secure, resilient societies where everyone has the chance to reach their full potential. Girls' education helps preserve lives and strengthens communities and economies. A nation's productivity and economic growth are both boosted by its educated female population. And by failing to educate girls at the same level as boys, some nations lose more than $1 billion annually. So through supporting girls' education, communities, nations, and the entire world are transformed. Girls who acquire an education are more likely to lead healthy, fulfilling lives and are less likely to marry early. They create better futures for themselves and their family, are potentially able to earn higher wages and take part in decisions that mostly affect them.
Obviously, education is one of the most important barriers that women have against equality. I think it's a step down to the lack of preparation that women are going to have in the future. And we can see this happening in today's world. It seems like it would be something we would think about from the industrial era. And it is happening right now in front of us, for example. This is happening in Afghanistan, as you mentioned before, where women, children, aren't able to go
to primary school.
Which
is obviously a very questionable move for sure. So because they're not able to go to primary, they're also not able to go to secondary or further education. And then that is a problem, because if they were ever to escape Afghanistan and come to another country, they wouldn't have the education necessary to make something of themselves. And it would be very hard for those women to try and learn something new or try to do something with themselves, because they wouldn't be able to. They were never taught how to do that.
It's a very disheartening topic as well, because in the case of Afghanistan, it's gotten so bad to the point where certain people are running secret schools within their neighborhood and stuff, and it just shows that the restrictions being placed on women's freedom results in people taking drastic measures that could potentially threaten their safety if they were caught doing that, since it's been banned as of now. Education has been banned, higher education has been banned. I believe they banned them from going to university now. So running these secret schools puts them at risk and puts them in danger of the consequences, since it's technically been banned. So it just goes to show what women are willing to do just to get their basic rights, and how the control that's been taken over the country is set to oppress them and hold them back.
And this will also become a problem in the future, because the idea that is currently being held, the norm, is that women are only there to have more children and to be the wife of someone, usually a man. And obviously, because of that, this idea that we are perpetually seeing and continuing to happen, even in a future where maybe we don't have those rules anymore, people will still think that way, and that is a problem, because no matter how much education they are given, if they have that mentality, it's very hard, and obviously there's nothing we can do right now. And so it seems like we're going backwards, and we're not giving women the basic rights that they need by removing education from their lives.
And that highlights a grey area, an area for change, because as you said, that is the norm in certain communities and in certain cultures, certain societies, that is the norm. And that's basically putting out the message that that's what's required of women, to just marry young, have children, be the primary caregiver. And it's just completely restricting their freedoms. It's putting a cap on their success, and just treating women, just objectifying women essentially, and just treating them as if they're just there to serve a man or children.
And it is a very difficult ideology. You said before, you just mentioned a forced marriages or early marriages, so children marrying someone older. That is a very big problem that still continues to happen, and sometimes because of that ideology, women are made to think that that is okay, and then they do that to their own kids. So you've got 13-year-olds being married to 50-year-old men, and once they get married, their education stops wherever they finished it. And that is a problem, because then that cycle can never be finished, can never be undone, because we've got this same problem going around and around. But because women are still not being educated, the problem still is there. And because of the communities being such a tight-knit group, there's nothing we can do to not have this happen.
Yes, also one important problem is the political underrepresentation of women. We must say it's a global issue, and many nations still have a long way to go before achieving gender parity in positions of political leadership. One fact is that only 5 countries have 50% or more women in parliamentary and single or lower houses. Rwanda, Cuba, Nicaragua, Mexico, and the United Arab Emirates. It's important to have balanced political participation and power sharing between women and men, because this is a target set by the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action. Sadly, women are generally underrepresented in political office worldwide, and their underrepresentation becomes larger in more senior positions. Understanding the causes is crucial in order to design effective policies to address existing gender gaps.
some of the policies that have been proposed are used to empower women in political representation and review. The persistent underrepresentation of women in political office has led to an increased interest in understanding why. The main reasons for the gender gap is, well, they appear to be that women are less encouraged to run for office than men and are less likely to believe that they are qualified for office. We have an example, Saudi Arabia in 2015. It was the last country to grant female suffrage. So there is some kind of improvement, but still very slow. Women make up to less than 23% of parliamentarians in the Arab region, while men make up more than 77%. This stigma against women in politics is still alive and well, it's a barrier that continues to exist. For instance, Sweden is one good example. Why? Because it has shows that gender equality can be achieved. 46.1% of the parliamentary government are women. Also, only one third of Sweden municipalities are led by women. So Sweden is really improving on this situation. But sadly, the Middle East and Northern Africa region has the lowest percentage of female parliamentary representation in the world. However, some nations are taking significant steps to increase the representation of women in politics, like United Arab Emirates, that in 2009 they are increasing their cabinet position for women. And now they are making one third of that cabinet position, so we can see like with good eyes this. Also, another two countries that are trying to improve, even though they are in the same region, are Bahrain with 20% and Oman also. Well, it's important to know that there are many structural, cultural and social obstacles in the Middle East for women to continue participating in politics, but nowadays this is trying to change. Also, it's very well known that in this region women suffer from restrictions on travel and mobility, discriminatory laws and cultural stereotypes that portray women as unsuitable for political leadership. These are just few examples of the legal barriers and cultural barriers that women have. But, well, we can say that also the lack of resources in education, training and money is also one big challenge about this. However, there are initiatives that they are trying to remove these obstacles and advance in women's political participation in the Middle East.
As you very well mentioned, it is very important to have women in political places to have representation, mainly due to the fact that women are half of the world population, so it is important for us to be represented as such. It is also important because many of the decisions and legislations and laws that are passed are about women, and it's not safe and it is not fair for them not to be present, represented in a way where they are able to express themselves freely due to all the legislations and most of the political power being men. This can, as you well said, this happens because they are not reinforced to run for political places, and also due to education, to the fact that there is not enough education and there is a bias when choosing who you'd want to rule and what education is given.
As you mentioned previously about the lack of representation for women in senior leadership positions, this goes to show that the field of politics is male-dominated and the policies that are set that concern women are created by men and don't actually favour women. If more women were represented in politics, they would gain the control they need to be able to put forward the necessary legislation that is required to cater to women's needs. A notable example of legislation created by men used to restrict women's freedom is the overturning of Roe v. Wade. On Friday, June 24, 2022, the US Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, which was the landmark piece of legislation that made access to an abortion a federal right in the United States. The decision dismantled 50 years of legal protection and paved the way for individual states to curtail or outright ban abortion rights.
So, according to the World Health Organization, every 8 minutes, a woman in a developing nation will die of complications arising from an unsafe abortion, which is defined as a procedure for terminating an unintended pregnancy carried out either by persons lacking the necessary skills or in an environment that does not conform to minimal medical standards, or both. So, in other words, 42 million women choose abortion, and nearly half of those procedures, well, which would be 20 million, are unsafe. And from those 20 million, 68,000 women die of unsafe abortion annually, and this makes it one of the leading causes of maternity mortality, that being 13%. And then 5 million others who survive the unsafe abortion will suffer long-term health complications. So again, this is a pressing issue, and this goes to show how we need women in power, we need education, and we need as much laws passed that somehow help the woman be safe. Furthermore, with the education part and with the political part, obviously, with lack of bodily autonomy, we also have female genital mutilation, which is seen as a myth, but does happen, especially in Northern Africa. And so this is when they cut certain... It's a procedure that involves the removal of the external female genitalia, and it is usually done for non-medical reasons. And there are many consequences to this, such as death, urine retention, increased risk of HIV and AIDS, and uterus and vaginal pelvic infections, among many others. But this does go to show how, what we said before, how important education is, because this is only done as a justification because of cleanliness, or because they think it will protect the family honor and the girl's virginity, when in reality there is absolutely no reason why that should be done. And I think if the people who are doing this understood and were educated enough about why this does more wrong than well, and how many women die because of this, and it would probably stop happening. And also, if we had women in power in political stances, this would have been banned a long time ago, because it really brings nothing to the table, and it is just a way to harm women and to have them under control, which is a very sad thing to see happen. And it is definitely something that would not happen. This and abortions would not happen without female and without education and more power.
This is also just a further way to oppress women, as one of the key reasons I believe that's behind this is to preserve a woman for a man, for the purpose of serving a man in the marriage. And that just goes to show that in many areas, in many countries around the world, they still do believe that a woman's sole purpose is to serve a man and is to just obey and
to have children. And it is definitely a very sad thing to happen. It's just for pure pleasure, and when they want this woman, they want this woman to be pure, so they do out virginity tests or like the female genital mutilation per se, and it is a way to just have them pure, which is a very sad thing to see, and for sure a very horrible thing. But this would not be happening if women had power and were in control and had a say, and it all would not happen if women were also educated within their realms, possibly. to make sure this didn't happen, because I think if women that did this were educated enough to know what happens, this would not keep going on. So it is definitely very important.
Overall, it is important that women are represented in these fields, as this helps to work toward their freedom and helps to alleviate the restrictions on their rights that are inflicted upon them in society.
As mentioned previously, we conducted an interview with Poppy Lindsay, the welfare officer here at Reading. So for the final part of this segment, we will present some further information on the issues surrounding gender representation and provide an insight into her own experience as a female welfare officer.
What do you think women's issues are in politics?
I think women's issues are being heard, I think, by the people who are in power. I think the people in power don't often know exactly how this is affecting women if there aren't enough women in power. So I think that's a huge issue. I think specifically there are issues around the workplace. I think workplace rights for women are huge. I think things like discrimination when being hired, I think kind of period leave and menopause leave and things like that aren't respected because there's not enough people in power who understand that that's an issue for women. And I think also like sexual assault and sexual harassment not taken seriously, even though it's a huge, huge issue in our country. So, yeah.
How can we increase women's political participation?
I think, first of all, we have to have female role models. I think there's been a huge issue. I remember I was growing up and I genuinely thought like women couldn't do certain jobs and that they just weren't capable of doing it. And I think that put me off hugely. And I think even kind of studying politics further on, I saw a lack of women and I just thought this is kind of isn't the place for me, or maybe because women aren't sometimes the loudest voices in the room, or they're not they aren't used to taking up as much space, then they're not as kind of comfortable in spaces where they have a lot of power. And I think once we have role models in those spaces, then a lot more women will get involved. And I think it starts from a young age. I think from a young age, I think the way that classrooms are set up and the way that I was always seeing men kind of succeed and women not, then I just didn't realise I could be in a position of leadership and power and things.
And do you believe gender equality concerns men?
I think there's issues that affect men, and I think sometimes they are disproportionate. I think there's male suicides and there's a huge issue around male mental health. I think in terms of gender equality, there is a longer way to go with women. And I think there's often the kind of criticism, if you do anything in terms of women's equality, there's always the criticism of like, what about men? And what about, you know, when's men's International Men's Day and things like that? And I think, yeah, those issues are so important, but they're not the biggest issues at the table at the moment. So
how many women have you safeguarded, and is this proportionate to men?
So I think generally I see more women who are kind of needing help. I think they are happier to reach out, which is a kind of issue for men. They feel like they can't reach out and be emotional and kind of open up until maybe it's at the last minute. So I do think I see a lot of women, and I think that's because I also do a lot of work around kind of women's health and kind of increasing kind of positive attitudes towards women and things like that. And I think maybe people feel that it's safer to come to me as a woman as well. I think I would like to see kind of more men, because it would mean more people were speaking up, but I don't.
Why do you think there is such an apparent lack of representation for girls and women in education, as this is a continuous problem, but most of the teachers tend to be women?
I think, like with a lot of professions, I think men find it a lot easier to get to the top and to kind of to succeed on a kind of more general level. So I found this at universities particularly. Like you say, I see a lot of kind of women lecturers and doing really incredible things, but they stay there. And then I sit on university council, which is kind of the kind of general high level what happens at the university. And I think there's about 5 women on it. And it's kind of like, I remember the first time, it was one of the kind of the first times I felt like really outnumbered. And I remember sitting there kind of a few weeks into my job being like, God, like, why do I feel like I can't do this? And I looked around and was like, I'm one of about 4 or 5 women. And I think if we have, I would love to see the kind of stats of how many women we have teaching and then how many we have in a kind of governance level. It is a huge issue. I think it is maybe confidence in progressing, because like I said earlier, it's kind of if you don't see another woman in that position of power, you're not going to feel like you can get there. There's a huge issue around kind of women staying where they are and men definitely progressing to higher positions.
Do you think that increasing cases of Met police officers who have been accused of crimes against women is concerned with the lack of representation for women in this industry?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the police force, I mean, just from my kind of subconscious bias, I always think of a man. I think you just say like a policeman, and that's always what I've grown up thinking about. And I think there genuinely are probably more men in the police force. And from what I've heard, the culture there is very kind of male orientated. A lot of kind of sexist jokes and kind of things that go unspoken about. And I think if you've got more women in the room, people are less likely to do that. So if they're not represented, then there's going to be people feeling more comfortable to kind of go a bit more to the line about what they're joking about, and maybe, you know, maybe not just joking and kind of acting as well. I think often when you see people who feel kind of men who feel very strongly about women's rights and things, it's usually because they've grown up around a lot of women and kind of been brought up in that environment. And I think it's the same in a workplace. If you're not around women who are representing, then you won't care as much.
When you went to class, were there times where you felt a bit you didn't want to really speak just because, or you had a male teacher and like he just picked on like male students and you didn't get the chance?
Yeah, definitely. I had an experience in my first year, and it was in my first week of uni, my first seminar for this module, and I went in, there was about 10 people, I was the only woman, and it was on kind of international relations and things like that, so I thought, you know, it's not going to be particularly gendered or anything. This lecturer managed to kind of make it like that, and I think he was quite a strict lecturer, I guess, but I do feel like I kind of bore the brunt of that quite often. And there was a kind of experience I had once where I felt quite, that was the only time I've been like, oh, this is actually because I am female that he has kind of underestimated me. In college I did some coursework on something, the American Civil War, and I just remembered the certain date that it started, and he said, oh, I wonder if anyone knows that date. And I had my laptop open and I said, oh, it's 1865 or something like that. And he's like, well, you've just googled it, haven't you? I was like, no, I just knew that off the top of my head. And it was a very kind of, he's never said that to anyone else, he's had that laptop open. And I just thought, is it because I don't seem like I might know that? Or, and that was very early on, and I just thought, it was at that point I was like, well, politics is going to be a bit difficult. And in my third year I did a feminism module, which I thought I was going to really enjoy, and I did the content of it, but the kind of debates we had in class, I felt very kind of uncomfortable, and I wouldn't usually talking about that, but I just felt very like kind of attacked, and it was a really good experience because I felt like, you know, this is me really experiencing underrepresentation at its kind of center. But yeah, it was a really interesting experience. Yeah.
Do you feel that there should be more policies implemented in schools to like safeguard women from like experiencing things like similarly to what you experienced yourself?
Yeah, hugely. I think something, when people are like, well, what are you going to do to fix it then, and why, how do we change this? I think the thing I always think is it starts in schools. It starts when people are younger. You know, if we go to school and we're like four, it's kind of what we see there is how we are kind of shaped. And I think if we are able to give examples of what's right and what's wrong, and not just kind of in a context of, I remember learning loads about like don't steal and don't like hit someone and whatever, but if we say like, if we make that a thing about women and men, and this does happen, and kind of put it in a way that children might understand, then I think that's the kind of way forwards, because otherwise it gets too late and people have already been shaped into the views they have. I mean, I was seeing a thing about Andrew Tate, and there was like a 9-year-old or something saying and kind of agreeing with the views, and I was like, how do you reverse that if someone believes that at 9? Where do you go from there?
Do you think that social media like plays a big role in people's attitudes towards like gender discussions and everything? Because like one thing that you mentioned that I like found very interesting was about Andrew Tate. Like his influence has had a big impact on like the younger generation of boys, because at one point I did hear that some of the like male students were refusing to accept work from the female teachers.
Yeah, I think recently social media has been a huge thing with Andrew Tate, and all of, I think he's the tip of the iceberg, but we have mini Andrew Tates everywhere kind of saying exactly the same things, but he's just had a bigger platform. And I think it is around the discussion around gender that it becomes really difficult, because I mean, I read the things that Andrew Tate says and I feel so angry, and I just want to reply to all the comments and type and say all these things, and then I'm like, but I have to think, I'm alienating everyone else. You've got to engage in like a proper discussion about it, and it's really hard because you just want to vent and you just want to be like, you're so stupid for thinking these things. and it's concerning because anyone can access social media now. Like you say, you've got boys who are like, you know, already in primary school saying these things about women teachers, and I can't imagine being a female teacher and hearing that from a young boy. I would just be like devastated about kind of the future of these people. But I do think, yeah, I think social media is 50%, if not more, of the problem, because I just think if we didn't have it, where would we get all this information from? You'd have to go out and look for it, but it is arriving on people's screens when they didn't ask for it, and it is just going in straight away, and it is worrying.
So you think social media is like a tool that instead of helping, it's damaging the, I don't know, the young children's mind and so on?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how you can like tailor your social media, because I remember I went through a phase when I was younger and it was kind of, I followed all these like fitness influencers and dieters and things like that, and started to feel really negatively about myself and immediately kind of unfollowed them all, followed all these kind of body positive, nice quotes and everything, and started to feel so much better. And I didn't realise how much of a direct impact it would have on how I acted in my everyday life. And I think it's exactly the same with kind of gender discussion and representation and things. If I finish work and I'm scrolling through and see all of these, you know, whatever Andrew Tate's now come out with, and I just feel so down, and I feel like, you know, are we getting anywhere? And I think it's the same with young people. If they're kind of reading it and they're going to go into school the next day, oh, did you see he said this? And, you know, just believe whatever you hear at that age.